Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 85 of the Padawan Unlimited podcast, a Star Wars Unlimited trading card game podcast on YouTube channel. Although not exclusively so, we do talk about some other nerdy stuff in regards to Star Wars. Today, I am joined by my gentlemen of like renown, Corey and Rob. How are you guys doing?
Hello there.
Hey.
Yeah.
Welcome back,
Gil. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks. I am glad to be back.
From the desert.
Yeah. In Arizona. The Mesa or Mesa. I feel like I'm pronouncing everything wrong nowadays.
No, it's Mesa.
The Mesa, Arizona.
It's called the Mesa, qualifier. Like the Meta.
Yeah, the Mesa, the Meta.
Well, you're now going to be like Jar Jar. Mesa, back from.
Mesa, back from Mesa.
Mesa, back from the Mesa.
Yeah, this is so funny. So before we get into it, if you're new to the channel, welcome. Thank you so much for joining. Speaking of new, we got a couple of people who joined to our Patreon recently. So Walter, Pastor Yoda, Zach Parks, thank you so much for joining our Patreon. Really appreciate you. And I hope you enjoy the competitive podcast, the competitive pup podcast that we got going on there. It's going to be every 2 weeks. We're releasing an episode, and I'm going to try to intersperse stuff in between. I'm going to try to get some special guests, all more for like the try hard out of the casual try hard. That's the goal. So hope you enjoy that.
Gil, don't we have some other news there in terms of things that might be coming up for the people who are newly subscribed to Patreon?
Yeah, go ahead. Share the news.
Well, I mean, I don't want to steal Corey's thunder here because I know we both been kind of working on it. I think Corey, you kind of came up with this, so I'll let you lead on this one.
What are we talking about? Like
the pup league, of course.
Yeah, okay. So
that's not Patreon exclusive, but
that's what I was saying. Okay, are we doing okay? That's why I was confused. Like, is there a Patreon exclusive thing I'm forgetting about? But no, we had some great success with the pup league a couple months ago. It seemed like a lot of fun. Like I wasn't able to participate, or we weren't participating. Gil was able to participate a little bit, but seeing some of those decks was a lot of fun, and I'm excited to say we are going to do another one very soon. Mm-hmm. So keep an eye out. We're going to probably have some signups to see who's interested, but we want to expand it a little bit. But this time we're going to do commons only again, but it's going to be sets 4 through 6 only. So kind of a pre-rotation prep, as if you will. That's going to be exciting, a little bit more restricted and restrictive. So I'm excited to see what you guys come up with those common only decks.
I'm excited. Yeah.
Glad, Rob. Yeah. And I was going to say, and so that's one of the great advantages of being a Patreon member, I guess, is that if you want to participate, you get entry into the league for free. Right?
Yes, that's how exactly. We're that is doing true. It. Your entry fee is waived as a paid Patreon member. That is correct. So other good news, other stuff before we get into the segments. So we noted that I came from the Mace sector qualifier this past weekend. I did very well. I didn't make day 2, but I was top 64, which means that I got some extra prizing. I got an uncut sheet. I unfortunately hit some matchups that I was destined to lose in, just guaranteed. I was like, well, it was really tough. Really tough slog that some of my cards just decided not to show up for me for the couple of those games, but that's okay. Either way, in celebration of that achievement, Pup has points on the board now, and we'll talk about that more during the meta section. I have a season one sector qualifier. Chancellor Palpatine game mat. So this is the participation mat that that is available to everyone. I am going to give this away to one lucky listener.
And if you're watching on YouTube, you'll get to see Gil's holding it up.
Yeah. It's Chancellor Palpatine. It's Knight and Coruscant. He's looking mighty determined. Senate. Yeah, he is the Senate.
Evil.
I'll give that out to any one lucky winner. We'll leave the survey open, the raffle open for 2 weeks as per usual, and we'll announce it at that point. So probably mid February. And again, as if I win, we all win. In that sense, you know, this is a great community and we did some great play testing, got some great insight. I always learn even when I'm coaching members of the pup community. So my win is your win. Thank you so much. And hopefully whoever wins this enjoys the mat if you are unable to go to a sector qualifier and or if you just really like Chancellor Palpatine.
Who doesn't?
Yeah, who doesn't? Who doesn't like exactly. that guy? He's better than Malorum.
He's so likable. He's relatable and
got
so
no confidence.
Like I should
in
vote him into power.
Yeah, yeah. He didn't want the leadership. He was thrust into it, you know, by Jar Jar Binks. Okay.
With great reluctance.
Yeah, with great reluctance. Okay. So again, thank you so much. Let's get into it.
Let's go.
Corey, what do you got for us for collection?
Oh, well, collection, again, we are still in that spoiler season, so we do have some more spoilers for you guys that came out this week, and a couple leaders, and they also showed, they did the stream, the spotlight deck, so we got to see the full list. You guys can definitely check those out, but I would love to just highlight a couple of these new spoiler cards that we got, and maybe a leader too. But Rob, do you have one? I have a feeling you have one that you would love to talk about. So I will definitely let you lead that off.
So I mean, like we got a couple new leaders. I am intrigued by the new Vader leader. I will say I don't know if he's good or not, but man, he's gonna have a very interesting flip turn. So for those of you who didn't see this one. He is a 7 flip leader. Sorry, I'm just pulling him up in the background. Apologies. He's a seven flip leader. He has an action, which is to exhaust him and then you discard a card from your hand, you deal 1 damage to a unit or a base. And then on his flip side, he flips on 7 as a 6/8. And then on attack, you can discard any number of cards from your hand, and you deal damage to a unit or base equal to the number of cards discarded in this way. So he's a big body when he comes out. And between a couple different plot cards, so you could give him Sudden Ferocity, that turns him into a 9/8. And then you can also potentially play, what's the card that I'm blanking on?
Cinta aggression.
Yeah, exactly. It's the
negotiations.
Aggressive negotiations. Thank you. Aggressive negotiations. This is great radio. Okay. Aggressive negotiations, where you are now discarding cards. You're now gaining
you're
power.
Doing extra damage.
The cards in your hand that you can then discard. So you're going to gain power. He's going to go even higher, and then you can discard them again to deal more damage. You're looking at doing like a 15. Somewhere between, like, I think average is probably going to be about 12, but you could get upwards of 15 power in a single swing.
To summarize that, new Darth Vader is a really big late body that has, like, an execute maneuver. Like,
basically,
you get him on the thing, he's probably going to complete the game at 7 resources if you don't defeat him, you know?
Yeah.
Or at least he has the option to. I think that his art is so, like,
derpy.
Wonky looking. I think it's really wonky looking.
It's a great scene, but it is.
I think the showcase is where it's going to be at. I'm holding judgment for the showcase because I think they're cheaping out on the common card like art for it, but the showcase is going to be sick. Like it's going to be him with like a fist up and like bodies behind him, like with a red lightsaber just like cutting through things. Like it's going to be.
This is Rogue One, right?
This is Rogue One.
Yeah, it's the Rogue One thing. It's from the perspective of the guy who's like looking up at him with the Death Star plans. Like, oh my gosh, Darth Vader.
It's a fascinating, as you said on Discord, deal. It's a fascinating leader. I think it could be very interesting. We will see if it's going to be good or not. But it's Vader. You'd hope they would give Vader some cool stuff.
I don't know if his active ability is going to be very useful during the course of the game. It may help you like here and there, but it's really about
his flip.
His
leader ability is really useful.
I think we're trying to burn. I think he's going to be a $200 showcase.
I agree with that.
He's not only going to be useful, mark my words, actually don't, but like he is going to be like a useful leader that is now, and it's harder to get showcases next set. I think they changed the ratios, right?
They changed
the ratios. Like, he's not going to be $40. He's not going to be $100. I think he's going to be like at least $150, probably around $200. That's what I think it's going to be, right? If I get him, I'm holding him. I want to play that leader for sure.
Well, Vader was going to always be expensive anyway. He's a popular character. It's just going to be, you know, like his showcase was always going to be valuable, even if not. Think about before set 4 Vader became popular, like early in JTL, his showcase was bananas priced because it was just like, it's Vader. We want a Vader. And it was actually the first Vader showcase because we still hadn't gotten the one from set 1 yet.
Yeah.
So, I wouldn't be shocked if this is a very expensive one as well. But the one bit of tech I will say is that this is going to be one of those ways that you can turn Anakin Champion of Mortis all the way on because you're discarding cards. So if you just put one set of heroic cards in there that you're planning on discarding to gain damage, this is going to be a way to really turn on Champion of Mortis. I think Red Blue is probably going to be the way to go with him, similar to the way he was played in set one.
Speaking of Red Blue, I think Corey, I think I know which card you were trying to allude to. The legendary card, right? But you've spoken enough, Rob. Corey.
Yeah, I wanted to give this one to you, Rob, because I was like, let's do some of this, the cards, the legendaries, Rob, because you are a big fan of Super Laser Blast. You were on a search for the all art one from Galactics, where you were able to achieve getting that set for it, which is great. But it's kind of back, maybe. Better, but also more restricted too with the triple aspects. But we got an 8 cost event called Single Reactor Ignition. This is a legendary. The event says it's a vigilance, aggression, and villainy aspect. So you are tied to those. But the event says defeat all units. So this is a Super Laser Blast, essentially. Defeat all units. No restrictions there.
But wait, there's more.
Yeah. And for each enemy unit defeated this way, deal 1 damage to its controller's base. So, like, this is pretty crazy in Twin Suns. This is crazy in a control deck. If someone tries to go wide, yeah. you are getting extra value from this.
Yeah.
Super Laser Patch was like, oh, well, it's a reset. This is more than that.
Dude, okay, so think about with Vader, your $200 Vader showcase with, like, 3 hyperspace foils of these bad boys. Mm-hmm. Oh. And, like, you throw the Vader down. He can't deal with it. He's getting overwhelmed. He's like, you know what? I don't even care. I'm single reaction ignition. Boom. Everyone's gone. You're doing damage to the base. They load up the board again. Boom. You're like, you just do it turn after turn after turn. And the only one who survives, you know who it is? Ray.
Yeah, that's true. Indeed.
Sorry.
No, that's a great point. And like, if you have cards that say can't be defeated by enemy card abilities, you know, that's where this can shine.
This card's gonna look so good.
Johnny Marr,
the hyperspace of this is gonna
got
be
the
really
yeah,
nice.
It's got a great, great visual look to it, and the blue red combination is so cool looking on it.
Yeah,
you know, I'm actually curious how hyperspace is gonna look with these double aspect or triple aspect cards, because like on the normal cards or the regular cards without the hyperspace borders, you have like half blue, half red, like in this case, with the villainous treatment to it. I wonder if they're gonna tint the edges maybe or something, like where on the hyperspaces.
I think the triple aspects at this point we just know are gonna be 2 of the normal color, like normal, like red, blue, green, whatever, and then it's not gonna be villainy or heroism. There's not gonna be like I don't think, maybe there is already, but like, I don't think it's be like a vigilance, command, cunning thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I mean, the border treatment is more just like the red blue split that they have kind of going on the cards. I wonder how they're going to treat that on the hyperspaces or if they are at all.
Well, imagine if they do a triple aspect where it's double aggression and vigilance or something like that. Cause you see that in Magic, right? So it's like, you could see multiples, you know, like a new command would be double command and a, you know, another or triple commands or something.
So going back to single reaction ignition, I have a question for you. Do we think this is gonna be like a $20 legendary, $30?
So this one is not, I don't think it's gonna be up there, but again, it's so hard to predict right now the market, because we are losing so many cards that are playable. And like, what I'm curious to see is how much is Super Laser Blast going for, right? And how much is it getting played? So we kind of have some history to look back on to see where this correlates with this one. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing this is probably in the 10 to 15 range.
Yeah, I don't know if it breaks 20, but it's going to be up there, because this is
specific in a deck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is the replacement to Super Laser Blast. So, I mean, when you talk about like wide removal, this is going to be the card that does it. And yeah, it is a little bit more restrictive because it's triple aspect. Unless, you know, we have been teased the art for Fear and Dead Men. I don't know if that's what the card's going to be called, but it's that's the iconic scene from the comics, which may also potentially be a removal event that may be less restrictive. But, you know, right now, this is the only removal event that we have spoiled that is going to, you know, be as wide as Super Last West was.
Yeah. Okay. If it's okay, Corey, I'd like to talk about some of the uncommons that are out there, right? So I think I really like, and you may not agree with me, but there are two cards specifically that I really like that are, well,
I think
three.
I know one.
There's three, but two of them. One of them is Finn, and one of them is Rose.
Yep.
Nice.
Yep.
Finn and Rose is coming. Finn and Rose is a combination with a token deck is going to be why I think it's going to be awesome, right? Like I'm thinking like Akbar Blue or like something like that. It's just like it's Finn. So let's talk about this a little bit more. So Finn is an uncommon. He's a six cost, cunning, vigilance. He's six attack, five health. Yep. Has ambush. Fantastic.
Awesome.
Already yep. off the rip. And on attack, you may give a shield token to a non-unique unit. So you're automatically going to give a shield token to something because you have the ambush. If you choose
the unit. Yep.
And you have the unit. So this is where I think like a token deck with like, again, like an Akbar or something, Akbar Blue is going to be like ridiculous because he comes out, he does a lot of damage. And then Rose Tico is a five cost, so one below, so right, like filling up the curve, right? 5/5. If you control a non-unique unit or like a token unit, for example, I'm going token. That's not the only non-unique, whatever. This unit enters play ready.
Yeah,
it's just like bam, bam, bam. You know, and you'll have three bodies with with an Akbar out there. I'm a fan. Yeah. These are like good and. And Finn is an uncommon, so it's pretty reasonable to get in like limited versus like Rose is rare, but like so constructed more. I just think it's cool.
Yeah. Well, Faith in Your Friends is going to be a thing going forward. And if you're using a yellow deck now, Rose is pretty much guaranteed to come in the ambush. Like come in ready rather. I think you said it on Discord, Gil. It's like she's just going to be, she's the new Falcon in some ways. She's a little bit bigger, she's a little bit later, but she, you know, coming in ready with very little overhead to try and get her to have that happen, she's going to be in a lot of decks.
Yeah, with Sabe comes out at five. She has, you have Faith with Your Friends. You probably play this a couple of times. You deploy her first, they have to deal with her, and then Sabe comes out and you attack, and then you get a card from their hand. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just there's some spice, I think. Like, that seems just fun. Maybe it's not good, quote unquote, but like, it seems just really fun for
no,
me.
No, I'm seeing a lot, I've seen a couple times here already where they got characters that are, you know, together and they work well together from their movie or from their whatever show or not. Because you had Baze and Churrit, right?
Yeah.
They kind of work boom, boom, back to back. One comes out and then the next one comes out and it works real well. And then same thing here. Yeah, with Rose and then Finn. And we finally get a good Finn card. Like, we haven't seen one yet. So,
yeah. I don't know if I'm as high on Finn, Gil, but I think he's definitely, first of all, he's definitely the most playable Finn we have gotten to date.
He is the highest ambush six cost card. So, like, attack value, right?
Yeah.
He's killing most of the things. There's no six cost ambusher out there that's higher than
six. Swinging for six. No, yeah. And I think there's value there with him. It's just a question of the only thing that limits him a little bit, his color combination, he's blue yellow. So that's, you know, but to your point, you know, I do also think that we're going to start to see color combinations that we may not have seen a lot of previously because of these dual aspect cards or triple aspect cards. And, you know, because people are trying to take advantage of them, because I think much like the double aspect cards from sets one, you know, one through six, you know, they are going to be more powerful than the standard the single or double single aspect cards that we've normally been seeing. And you know, like when you look at, for example, vigilance at four versus vigilance at six feels really good. Same thing with cunning, right? And then now we're getting a similar archetype where, you know, you're getting more value at that cost as long as you have the aspects to take advantage of it.
So a quick question then. Do you guys think we get leaders that are non-heroic or villain that are double aspect?
I think they said we are, right?
I mean, they gave us DJ last set, so I would imagine that they're going to, you know, they teased us with it. I think there could be something like that.
Because my prediction is that we get an Emphas Nest, and I think Emphas Nest is going to be a cunning vigilance hero. Or not hero, cunning vigilance leader. No hero, no villain.
Okay. That's interesting. Cunning vigilance. I would have thought like green, but I guess blue makes sense too.
Good blue cards that I want. I want them to work with each other. So that's why it's like more a want than like.
So this is wish listing.
Enfys Nest Leader would be fascinating though, because her as a card has been useful, generally speaking, for like since its inception, right? And there's been two versions of Enfys Nest that they're all rotating out. Like all the Enfys Nest cards and the Cloud Rider, which is associated with that. So it's just like, that would be a good reprint, and it fits the motif.
Well, and a couple things, like they've spoiled the art for like her helmet, right? Which kind of looks like it might be an upgrade card, or I guess it would potentially be an event as well. I think that is a, I think that's probably a good call. If we're not getting her as a leader, I hope that we're at least getting her as a unit at this point. But I'm going to make another call on that because I think we're going to get this one. In my bones, one of my favorite characters from Clone Wars and other series of they're also in Rebels, Hondo. I think we're getting a double aspect Hondo. We've seen the legendary unit. I know that, but my gut says we could get also a leader version of him.
Hondo would be appropriate,
and it would fit. Yeah, exactly. It would fit the theme.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I feel like he'd be like.
He was in the shadows, right? So like he was in that. Like we were doing a lot of underworld here, too.
Yeah, yeah, but like if we get kind of the more gray area, Weequay version of Hondo, where he's kind of wheeling and dealing with both sides, it would make sense that he's not villainous or heroic, and he's just two aspects.
For sure.
I mean, he did help both sides in every war, essentially. So, and he's a smuggler. So, that's fascinating. I like that. I like those are two spicy takes. I like those takes. I think if we get Enfys and Hondo, I would be very happy with. I don't know what they would do, but like,
yeah, I'd be curious to see.
We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I'd be excited to see a Hondo though, because he is probably one of my favorite characters through
his showcase in Shadows is great. I love that.
Oh show. Yeah, it really is good.
Very very pretty showcase. I love. Showcases that have more than just the leader. They have like an
stuff
entourage
going on.
Really cool. Or yeah, with something going on, like that's so cool. Like Doc Afro is just like gray mountains in the back, but
yeah,
she's pretty looking showcase, but like there's like nothing else going on, right?
Yeah,
but okay, anything else before we move on to the next segment?
There was one more spicy prediction. I want to put it on the board right now, is that we see a Sebulba leader
Sebulba leader?
We saw the pod racing in some fashion. We got to have a leader that takes advantage of it in some way. That's just my way out there. Hope, you know, pie in the sky. Sebulba is coming in as a leader. Coming in hot. Let's go.
That'd be amazing. I hope that's true. I don't know. That's a good question.
We'll see. I mean, I don't think it's going to happen, but I want to just like...
You just want to will it into existence?
Exactly. Yeah, you got to speak it out in there and have it be heard.
There has to be like there's going to be a pod racing like thing one day. Like maybe another vehicle.
We saw pod racers. We saw artwork.
Yeah. Oh, no, but I mean like there's going to be like another vehicles oriented kind of set.
Like a jump to light speed for pod racing.
But the ground, not jump to light speed, like faster than, I don't know, whatever the speed of... Speeding
now this but... is pod racing.
Now this is pod racing.
This is pod racing. It's gonna be the come on. I'm waiting for this card. I've been waiting for this card.
And now you're all gonna be instead of you'll have like they'll bring back the pilot. They'll bring back the pilot mechanic for rotation, but it's all ground vehicles instead of space vehicles and stuff. I'm just that'd be sick. All right, cool. Thanks for the spicy take. Let's move on to the meta section. What do you got for us, Rob?
Exciting.
Well, we've got some, we have some interesting stuff. I'm going to take a little bit of a different tack to this week. So I'm going to start with some questions actually for you all. Starting with both of you guys. So I want your guys' take. What do you guys think was the most, the two most played decks this weekend? Well, and not just this weekend, but over the course of the last 2 weeks
in the world, like the world
for competitive,
the most
two played PQs sectors like that.
PQs and sectors. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I would imagine Han ECL is up there. Han 2 ECL, I would think.
Most played decks. I would then also, then I would say Yoda Data Vault. I think people were still riding that train.
Okay. Well, some news for you. It is actually both Hans. It's Han 2 ECL and Han 1 green. But what's interesting is so they're not making up like a huge portion of the meta, but their win, but their conversion rate is pretty high. So Han 1 green, which you can talk about a little bit here, Gil, was putting in a 25% conversion rate, made up about 5% of the meta. Han 2 ECL was conversion rate about 20%, making about 5.6% on the meta this weekend. The other one that is very highly represented but very poorly converting has been my boy Admiral Piet. Piet is he's showing up, and he's showing up in big numbers. I'm just trying to find his actual numbers. His numbers. So he was 6.3% of the meta. He's actually the biggest chunk of the meta. And this is Piet Red, but his conversion rate was an abysmal 13%. Not as bad as some of these other ones.
Sorry,
but
guys.
The decks that are very highly represented, his conversion rate was pretty abysmal.
Let's talk about conversion rate for those who might not know what that is. So when we talk about conversion rate, what this means is that when we think about the whole pool of players and decks, whatever combination in a tournament. For our conversation, we're talking about planetary qualifiers and sector qualifiers for the last 2 weeks, which is the first and second tier of competitive play. This is different from like the weekly plays. This is different from like organized play, like store showdowns and stuff. Yeah. That's casual and or relaxed play. Relaxed is like a term you probably not have heard of, but that's like the official cult like thing for that. When we talk about conversion, we're talking about the rate in which this deck leader-based combination makes it to a top cut, right? And so we're converting it, the wins are converting into like the best types of wins, essentially. So when we talk about conversion rate, so a conversion rate of like of 20% means that 20% of all Han 2s, ACL specifically, that enter a tournament make it to a top cut, which is astronomically high, right? Yes. That's bonkers, like bonkers good. And just to put it in perspective, whereas you said 13% for like a Piet Red is not the worst, but it's definitely not 20%. So 10% of all players, of all people who play it and like make it, like that's not really good conversion. I have my thoughts on that. But again, just to bring it back, for those of you who are more casual than tryhard, that's what that means.
Yep. And then, so one of the other things that we've been seeing is, To your point, Gil, Yoda was also fairly well represented. A lot of Vader 4 was also there. But one of the other ones that we've been seeing sneaking in recently has been Cad Tarkintown. And again, I think you made this point on the Discord a couple days ago, that what we're seeing is a lot of these like bigger decks, right? Like, you know, higher end mid range that are cheating out resources to get some bigger units. Decks like Yoda, who are just, you know, controlling it and dropping big units. But we're starting to see this Cad Weenie deck come into place. This is a Cad Tarkintown deck that's playing a very large number of one drops. Because the idea is that you're not getting past turn five with this deck. You might get to flip Cad and he's going to close it for you. But generally speaking, this type of deck is trying to go very, very low to the ground. And what we mean by that is that very small units with small attack values that either get pumped with you know, stat boosters, like a surprise strike or something like that. They go very wide, meaning they put a lot of them out. So you're not really playing big units, you're just playing a lot of them, and it's a lot for your opponent to deal with. And if they don't have a way to deal with that, particularly early on, and if it's a control against like a control player who's trying to remove one big thing a turn, if you have, you know, five units out because you've been putting out a bunch of stuff over a couple turns, they have a harder time dealing with that.
So,
and it's yeah. It's been a way to get under these larger decks.
And I want to talk about that a little bit more. So we essentially what Rob you've been saying is that like these are the decks that are out there now that are doing well. They are and Cad Tarkentown was a reaction to the decks that were doing well.
Correct.
Over the course of the past weeks, right? And we've been seeing this meta evolve, right? We saw it was Anakin first, something went on top of it, which was Yoda. People tried to get bigger, even bigger with that. And then they realized the next week after that, a lot of people realized, no, we gotta go under it again. And now people are going under that again, right? Trying to go in fast. Or like taking advantage or exploiting the weaknesses of Han 2, which, you know, with a Tarkentown decks, like they play a unit, Tarkentown gone. And now you're up on board. Now you're doing damage and they're trying to catch up. And so if we think about this cycle, right, especially when there's not a truly broken mechanic, like sets ago, we had the DJ, tech DJ combo. We had the Jengo, exhaust everything. Like unless there's a broken mechanic like that, a meta will always evolve, right? And so when you are, in my opinion, like, so let's think about reacting to the meta, right? There are two ways to go about doing that. One, you pick a deck that is like evergreen, that like always kind of does okay no matter what. So in this conversation, you talked about Han One
Green.
Well,
yep.
That's like, that's from Spark of Rebellion, Han One Green. That is like an evergreen deck. Like it always does well regardless of the meta. It might not win everything, but it will get to a top cut consistently. And mm-hmm. It's always underrated because of that sense, right? And it's very technical. The other way to approach this, and I'd love you guys if you guys agree or disagree with me, is that depending on where your PQ, well, depending on the timing of your PQ or your sector qualifier that you're going to participate in, you can actually predict where the meta is going to be that week, right? So we called it with like weeks ago that like Yoda, people were going to go under it. That was going to happen. I thought it was going to be space. That's how I approach it with Han One mm-hmm. Green. But people approached it in a different way in the sense that it went under very powerful with Han 2 ECL. People went under that again. Now we think about in another week or two, how are people going to react to a Cad Tarkentown deck and Han 2? Control? Like a wide control, right? Type thing, you know, like you can almost predict the cycle so that once you get to regionals, if you count back from that, like, okay, by regionals, it should be back at this meta.
Yeah. And I think with the bigger events, it is a lot more reasonable to do that for, right? Because you're getting a much wider audience to those events, where when you're kind of to the more relaxed events, you're getting a more localized clientele or whatever player base, and they're more likely to play things that they want to play, whereas these bigger events, people are going to try a little bit more try hardy, and they're going to be trying to predict the meta like you were saying and see where it could be going, and sometimes you get it perfect and sometimes you don't. I mean, that's what happens. Like, it's not a perfect science, but historical data does exist for this reason, and it is something you can go back to kind of see where things are going to go. Do you have a prediction, Rob, as far as regionals in a month?
In a month, I mean, I think it's going to be interesting because, let's see. So in a month, we still won't have Lawless time yet. It'll be just prior to this releasing. So it's really going to be towards the end of this cycle. Like, honestly, I'm very intrigued by it's either the Sabe yellow deck or the Han 1 yellow deck. They're very similar in terms of construction, in terms of speed. Because I think the way that we're kind of cycling, by the time we get I think we're gonna be back in kind of like a control-y land, and so you're trying to like kind of undercut that a little bit. Because it's been about, it's not exactly week to week that it changes. Like sometimes it's you know, it'll last for 2 weeks. It'll last a little bit longer. You'll start to see a little bit of transition. And I think we're going to be back to control if we're kind of following this cycle by the time regionals come around. So if you're thinking that, then you try to go, you know, under it. And then if you're thinking beyond that, you go, okay, well, here's what's going to be played. Here's what's going to be countering that. And I'm going to counter the counter. And then, or you just go rogue.
I know that you know that I know that you know.
That you know that I know yeah. that I'm no, playing
I,
control.
I mean, usually towards the end of a set, control starts to take yep. over a little bit more. So we might see a little bit more.
Yeah. And it's
towards that at regionals.
Well, and it's interesting too, because like, I think that like, it's also like it's the last hurrah for a lot of like the really big control leaders from set one. So like Palp and some of these that, you know, we're not going to, because that's literally going to be like the capstone to, you know, to first cycle. And then we're going to be moving to, you know, a lawless time and the new rotation, you know, pretty much right after it. So it should be really interesting. I also wouldn't be shocked if we see a slight resurgence of Sabine, you know, as people want to get their last runs in with her before she cycles out. So it could be interesting. Like I wonder if there's going to be like almost like a nostalgia run at some point, you know, towards the end of this as we get the last chance to play some of these.
As I'm digesting it, I think that by the time regionals comes back, we'll have at least a couple more weeks of really hard aggro, I think, especially with Han 1 yellow, like, you know, dominating the sector qualifier that just passed, right? People mm-hmm. are going to react to that and play it. That's going to take at least 2 or 3 weeks to run its course, and then someone's going to have tried to figure out that matchup,
yep.
Which then puts us right at the smack dab of, like, regional qualifier. So you know, if we think about what beats it, mid-range too hard control is probably where I think we're gonna be, whatever decks that might be. I don't think it's gonna be Yoda is really easily attackable, like Yoda data vault, unless you're like a pro, but there's a reason why someone like the top players were not on Yoda data vault this past weekend at Mesa, because they reacted to the meta, and I think you should too, you know, if you're trying to be super competitive. So I'm with you, Rob. Maybe I don't think it's going to be super hard control, but there's going to be some type of tempo soft control mid-rangey thing that's gonna mid-range definitely is going to be probably I think dominated by regional qualifiers.
A Secrets of Power Palpatine deck,
yeah,
you know, doing well.
Well, and I think he's going to continue to do well post rotation. He's going to continue to get some tools, and just being able to take advantage of like plot cards at a cheaper rate is just pretty good. If Smuggle has taught us anything, playing cards from your resource row is pretty advantageous, and if you get to do more of those on your flip turn at a cheaper rate, seems pretty good.
Yeah. Anything else you want to talk about in regards to the meta, Rob?
Well, I think you had some pretty good news in terms of talking about. I know you don't like to brag about this, but I'd be curious to hear your thoughts, because you did play Hanwon Green this past weekend at Mesa.
Talking about
you know, like how that played out and the things that you were kind of. You know, running into and the problems that you saw with it. I mean, Han 1, as we've said, has had a pretty good conversion rate, and overall, it's got a 54% win rate.
Yeah.
So, do you mind going into that a little bit?
Yeah. 41 players, it looks like, on Melee. Does that sound about right?
341 players total for the Mesa Sector Qualifier. Yeah. Somewhere around there. Yeah, I think it was less than 350. So not the biggest Sector Qualifier. However, I did place, I think, 49th, so top 64. You know, unfortunately, I wasn't able to close my win and ins. But yeah, I'll take you through the experience real quickly. So I did play a meta deck for this qualifier. I actually really focused in. I didn't wear like a lot of my Padawan Limited swag, because I really wanted to just take the time to be able to show the podcast listeners that, you know, how, or be able to talk about how you can succeed even if you're like more casual, right? I am on a competitive team, full disclosure. But I do not, to be clear, I do not play as many games as they do. They are very, and I do not always, I'm not always available to play test at the times they're available to play test. So I am hampered in that sense, but I do get to pick their brains for things. Again, full disclosure. But in terms of the tournament, I ended up with a 5-3 record. I actually started off really hot. I went 4-0, right, and was unable to convert the last three games. I played against Piet Red, round one. I played against Yoda Data Vault for two rounds after that, which is really tough for Hanwon Green. But I had an attack. I had an attack plan. I locked in. I think it was more that I had more like ice in my veins, that I was playing well and I wasn't focused on like the stress of like trying to just get a couple more damage in, right? I let the opponents beat themselves in that sense. Not that they were bad players, but I was just so focused on game to game. And I think that's actually pretty key for anyone who's in these tournaments. Like, you lock in, take it game by game. You know, don't necessarily focus on trying to be the champion, focus on winning what's right in front of you. And then unfortunately, and I played against a couple decks that were really hard. So Han 2 Blue Force particularly is a really tough matchup, and I have a game plan to win that, and I unfortunately was unable to execute because the cards I needed actually did not show up. For the Han 2 matchup, Han 2 Blue Force, like I go space hard and like I'm just gonna slam it, and I save confiscates for when they inevitably put an entrencher on my unit.
Right.
And I had the confiscate. I could never find the Chewy for four games straight. I found zero Chewies, and all I needed was that, right, to do that. And then I played against like a boss blue player who's good, but unfortunately I couldn't close those hard control matchups. It was a very good experience, I'll say. I thought of myself as a winner, right? I know not everyone thinks that way. Even when I was walking up to get the prizing, I was kind of giddy and happy. And then this one guy, I was like, yeah, we're the best losers. And I was like, what a unfortunate way to think about placing top 64 in a
300 person event. Yeah.
And over 300. I was like, that's unfortunate. Right. Because for me, I was happy. I got, you know, with everything that we put into it, with the playtesting on the Discord, I got to day, you know, I didn't get to day two, unfortunately, but I still did really, I got points on the board.
Yeah.
You know, like
top 64, that's a big thing at a sector, right? That's not the easy thing to do.
Yeah, that's not an accident. You don't accidentally fall into a winning record like that, right?
You basically cannot fall backwards into that. You have to do something. And yeah. No, that's great. And I know you've been working real hard on this and have had very close calls and some PQs and things like that with this deck as well. So it's great to see you get there and get into those prizings, because it's like you're just so close and then it's missing. But
yeah, but no, that I'll cool. probably talk about very it a little bit you, more in the competitive pod. But no, I think, you know, at the end of the day, success in a tournament comes down to two things: preparation and opportunity. Like you need to have perfect practice, right, so that when the opportunity arises for you to exploit at a tournament, you win, right? Mm-hmm. And to those together are like create the luck that you need to get to where you need to go. And sometimes like I can honestly say I don't prep as much as, I don't know, K2D or something like that. So you know, the opportunities might come, but I'm not prepared for it. But you know, that you know, be satisfied with where you're at, I think. And I think it's a humbling experience to be able to play against some of the best and do so well. No, I loved it. And I hope anyone who's listening gets to participate in these major tournaments and can do just as well as I do.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I think that can take us probably into the next part, because talking about like, you know, how do we kind of level up our game? Because Gil, you've been doing that there. I know one of the things that we were looking to discuss is like post game analysis, I guess, or like how do you look at what your successes, but also the things that you need to improve upon.
Yeah. So yeah, let's officially go into the last segment of the podcast, and it's again leveling up your game. I guess what we could talk about that. We had some podcasts, we had some submissions in the Discord to talk about, you know, what do you do to do that, to prepare, to write down whatever you're doing. So yeah, let's talk about that. I kind of took the spotlight for a couple minutes there. So I would love if anyone wants to, maybe you guys want to share your initial thoughts. That'd be great.
Well, I think one of the easiest things, and not necessarily easiest things, but something that can be really helpful for your, you know, game analysis is to review your games. And in order to do that, you kind of have to record them. But if you can record the games that you play and then watch them back, that can be super helpful to see the different opportunities, which in card games usually call them lines, right? So like the different lines, the play lines that you can have, and like you took this one line, like think about what would have happened. Like you got that tree of different, you know, multiverses of you playing, instead of playing X card, you're playing Y card. What would that have looked like, and how that could change the game? And there are ways to do that with you know, can't like recording your games in person with a, you know, iPhone or something. That's something I tried doing a couple times, and it's definitely very helpful for me to kind of go back and watch my own gameplay and to see things, because when you're not in it, right, if you're taking that bird's eye view, you can kind of spot things that you might not have spotted before when you're super close. And
yeah, I know that, I think that's great that to review. Oh, Rob, do you have anything that's different from that, or do you kind of do the same thing?
So for me, it's a lot of running. It, like, I do run it back in my head. I remember it's part and parcel of my my job. I have to keep track of a lot of different things at once, and so it just kind of sits in my head. And I'll burn over, you know, games that, like, I'm like, ah, why did I do X, Y, or Z, and come back to it. But more recently, what's you know, like I've been on Piet Red, you know, obviously the numbers are showing that you know he's not converting, and I'm seeing that, you know, in practice when we're doing that. Yesterday was a good example. Like I played, I basically didn't win a match. I won matches. I didn't want to win any rounds, with Piet. And it was, you know, like looking at it and going like, okay, well, I know into, for example, Hantu ECL, there's a very specific line that I need to kind of hit, because the Hantu, like, I really need to win game one. How do I win game one? I need to ramp ahead of them. I need to make sure that I'm dropping, Fulminatrix or hopefully drawing, you know, Turbo Laser Salvo to deal with their wide board. Then I'm able to kind of like, you know, punch through. But it's like looking at it and going back and going like, and this is why I'm sort of going to be back to the drawing board, in these coming weeks in terms of what I'm going to be playing. You know, it's a very specific line. And if you, to the point that you were kind of talking about, Gil, it's like, if you don't, even if you know what the lines are and you don't draw those, if you don't draw those cards, then you're not going to, you're unlikely to have success against a skilled player. Let's put it that way.
That's the thing, is you want to be able to have multiple lines. Yeah. Right. If you're stuck in a deck, yep, where you're like, you have one, you're a one trick pony and they stop that trick, it's doesn't feel good.
And that's been the thing that Piet's been struggling with. He is kind of a one trick pony. He's a very linear deck in terms of like what you have. The outs that you have aren't varied. So you have to hope, yeah, that you draw those things, and if you don't, you're going to have a bad time.
One of the things that, yeah, no, I think that's great, for sure. I think one of the things that I do, I actually do take notes. So if you're looking on the screen, you're going to see a notebook with like some handwritten notes that are in here that are from a variety of different tournaments, right? I actually go round by round. And so what I will say that I do is when I'm reviewing my games, I can't always film it. You don't always have permission to do that either, right? No. From an opponent, right? You can only do so much. But what, you know, one of the things that I always look for when I take notes is, when did I have a critical decision that I made that I had to think about? Like you have time to make like a note during a game, right? You could shorthand like Enfys, like EN, right? V, Tantive, Tan. Like you could do shorthand like that, where you write a quick note to trigger for later when that time happened, or, you know, like when you had to make that critical decision. Those are some things that I do, or direct right after a match or a game, I will go into my notebook and I will write down how I won or how I lost or where I think that occurred. And that way I can start again, try to replay that thought in my mind. It, to me, it comes down to like, if you have permission, then feel free to, if you have permission, feel free to film. If not, it comes down to those decision-making points where like you had a waylay and I saved it or I resourced it. And I think those are one of the things that you can do to like really be able to reflect later. And also it helps you calm down after an emotional high, whether that's good or bad after a game. Like you're not like, you can actually just like focus on like, okay, keep it fresh. Let me write it down. Let me be retrospective at that point. And then you could dwell on it later because you already knew that you did that. And to me, that is probably the most, every time I've done that, I've kind of reset my emotional state for the next match. Right. Yeah. And I'm like, yes. Yeah. So, that's one thing.
Great I'll share. Point. Absolutely. Cause the difference between matches usually comes down to a couple different play lines where you had one card or you didn't have one card. And like, how did you get to that point? Making notes on those moments and the critical ones, that's key for sure.
Or I'll even say you had a card that you needed, but it's in your resource row.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Unwind why that was in your resource row and why did you actually have to play that card? Like, why did you have to resource it? That happens to me all the time. I'm like, oh, I don't need this. I don't need this bamboozle. Right. I don't need this confiscate, whatever. And I'll put it in my resource row. It's only for to find out the next turn. Oh, I am so in trouble.
Like, and if I just, like, you know, it's down to knowing decks though as well, right? Knowing your opponent's decks, knowing the different cards and the different play lines that are most common, right? And I think that's another thing when reviewing your games and going back, not necessarily always video like you mentioned, but if you have notes and things, is how often are these meta decks just playing the same things over and over again, right? So it's like, this is the play line, you know, they're going to be doing these things consistently. 9 out of 10 times, you're going to see Guavian Antagonizer or whatever, and then you're going to see a Greedo or something on turn one from a cat. This, whatever it is, you're going to see double one drop from Han 4 in his space. Like, you know these things are coming.
You know what? Again, you know these things are coming, and I think there are two things that you could do to really address that. One is, like, remember, you can pass.
Right.
Like, write down the moment where you're like, I probably should have just passed. Right. Mm-hmm. And think about that. Like, who, if they do 1 or 2 damage to your deck or to your base, that's okay. Then the real game starts. Just take it.
And vice versa. What's one damage you're going to do to their base going to matter, considering you have an opportunity to do something more impactful the next turn because you're going first?
And write down when that happened. Write down what the scenario was. Like, take the time. It's okay. Unless you're playing like the super hard control like matchup where you're gonna run the time, like, do that, right? It's generally not a problem to be able to take that note. And then the other thing to say is that, like, talking about resources, write down like why, if you can, when you're reflecting, like, why did I resource this? Like, why did I think this was a good idea compared to why the other play? And I think when you reflect on that, you'll really understand, like, oh, because like when you're making, for me, when I'm making decisions on cards in my hand, I'm like, I can't just react to what's in front of me. Like, you have to think two or three turns ahead.
Yep.
You have to. That's only a recent thing for me, like, to truly appreciate, but it literally won me matches.
No, like, absolutely. You have, because if you're playing lines, specific play lines where you know that they know you're going to do something, you need to have certain cards. How you're getting there and how you're going to get to that point all depends on what cards are in your hand.
Yeah.
And so the more opportunities you have to get to that point by not resourcing a card that you might think is not needed at the moment, but the next turn you're going to need it to get to point B, that's where it's going to be important.
Go ahead, Rob.
Well, I was going to say, resourcing, it can be agonizing in this game, and particularly like turn to turn, yes, but particularly turn one, you know, there's that desire to like have the, you know, I have a turn one play, a turn two play, a turn three play, a turn four play. Like, I have a steady curve, and then I might resource some things that, you know, oh, I'm not going to play that until turn 6, but if that's the thing that you need to capstone and then you're relying on drawing it later, sometimes those are the decisions that you make like early on in the game that you don't think are losing you the game, but are losing you the game.
And don't put blinders on. Don't get, like you said, I got my 1, 2, 3 turns. Just because you have those planned, the game's going to dictate you may not want to do that. And you may.
Yeah. The last thing I'll talk about for this in terms of like, you know, reviewing your games or thinking about that is one of the strategies that I'll do and I espouse for sometimes is like make them have it.
Yeah.
Make them have it sometimes. You know what I mean? Like, so for me, like sometimes you don't like pass. And then if you think they're bluffing you, slam a card, right? Slam a card down and see what they do. If it fails, it fails. If not, then you just win. And one of the things I mean by that is like also you're catching an opponent by surprise with an unexpected move really trips people up.
Yep.
Like especially like if it's the last match of a game and like you're gonna mess with them. Like I used a 6 resource, change of heart card, to take a token space unit so that it would not defeat my big Falcon ship. They had no idea what to do with that. And I ended up winning that matchup because it was 1-1. It's the last game. He's like, he messed up and defeated something else. Like he just threw something else out there.
Throws them off their game. Yeah. And they start making mistakes.
Threw them off the game. Right. And I took lethal from them. And then I took the game eventually as well. Because they had
satisfying.
Because they had to use a card to defeat the token or whatever. I'm like, who would have thought, you know, who would do that, right? Anyway, like there's, you know, you're never truly out of it until like you actually give up mentally.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Go ahead, Rob.
Well, I was going to say, and I think that's particularly interesting coming from you, Gil. Just and I'm going to roast you a little bit here, but I go back about 2 months with you, plus or minus, because we've seen you, we've been watching you play for a while. You would have the tendency to get tilted over games, like one game could kind of throw you off, and mentally, then you're out of the game. If you're out of the game because you're thinking about something else, and you're kind of like caught in your head about something, you're not playing your best game. And it's interesting to hear you now talking about the fact that, like, you know, just taking that time to kind of recenter and reset yourself after each match, after each game. And, you know, go into it with, you know, kind of like a blank slate into each game that you play. It really, really interesting to see that kind of change because, you know, emotions run high and like we're all susceptible to it. But, you know.
I will say that that event you're talking about, I just felt betrayed by someone who I thought was a friend. that was
the betrayal.
The emotion of betrayal. No, I mean, no, it was actually almost exclusively that. You can't tell me how to feel, Rob. It was, oh my God. I just felt so betrayed.
We are past it though now. Top 64.
I know.
Now.
I'm just like, you know what? Yeah. You can't wallow in sadness.
Exactly.
Right. You don't, you know, that does nothing for yourself. You got to pick yourself up.
I want to mention for reviewing games or to level up your games, and it's the initial resourcing, like your turn one resource, like your initial resource. You pick 6 cards, maybe more if you have a specific base, or maybe less if you have a specific base. But that initial resource, like what you could do if you have a partner, you can have a game set up and you can play that game with those resources and resource different things and play out 4 turns, see what it looks like. Then go back, reset that same way, and resource something different and see how that looks and see what the different resources that you play down initially, how that dictates the game the next few turns. And doing that with the same setup, with different resources against a similar deck to see what that looks like and how that can change the different turns in the future is a way to help kind of review and kind of figure out what you're going to be doing in that specific game. So
no, that's great. That's great practice. And take notes when you're doing it. I'm a big fan of taking notes or if you're an audio person, just record what you were thinking. Right.
There you go.
Or if you don't ever trust yourself, have your buddy tell you what they think.
Constructive criticism is a good thing.
I agree. I mean, I'll be like, hey, should I resource one or two and or four, you know, of like the cards in my hand? They're like, you should do four. I'm like, okay. And like, you know, we do those like over the shoulder games against opponents sometimes. Obviously not during a tournament because that's cheating, but like, just casual play. Yeah, practice.
It's good to have that, you know, other perspective, outside perspective.
All right. Well, guys, thank you so much for this conversation. Hope it was helpful for everyone out there. Anyone who's new to the podcast, please remember to like, subscribe. Hope you enjoyed. And for everyone else out there, again, thank you so much for your continued support. We would not be here without you. So thank you so much. And until next time, may the force be with you.